This is Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's Friday, time for a reporter roundtable. Of course, this is when we get you up to date on the news that made headlines around our region this past week. Joining us live in studio today, our panel includes Kevin Richard with Idaho Ed News, Don Day with BoiseDev.com, and James Dawson with Boise State Public Radio News. Happy Friday.
Hello. Hey.
So apparently we have one less state legislator today.
Yeah.
So Kevin and Jimmy, you guys have been following this. So just kind of tell us the background first of former state representative John Green, and frankly, how we got where we are today, Jimmy.
Yeah. I mean, so you had former state representative John Green from the Kootenai County area up in North Idaho. He's been embroiled in this federal court case for a while now, where he's accused of helping a couple people in Texas where he used to live kind of launder this money that they got from proceeds from a lawsuit they were involved in way long ago, and not paying taxes on it. So essentially what prosecutors said was that his clients would give him gold coins and cash. He would deposit this into his bank accounts associated with his law practice and then use that money to pay off their credit card bills, basically. And so you had this whole trial in Texas over the last week. The jury deliberated for about 3 hours and returned guilty verdicts for both him and his client.
And this, I mean, this could mean upwards of 5 years in prison. I mean, this is what he was convicted of. We should be clear.
Right. He hasn't been sentenced yet. He was convicted on one count of felony. I believe the official term is conspiracy to defraud the United States.
Okay. So then take us to yesterday where he was basically ousted, correct?
Yeah, and he wasn't there. He did speak over the phone on Wednesday after the conviction to Associated Press reporter Keith Ridler, saying, "Hey, I intend to be back on Monday. I am not going to step down," but he did expect to serve prison time, is what he told Keith. So yesterday, we had asked the speaker, me and Betsy Russell of the Idaho Press, we tracked him down Wednesday afternoon. He said he's going to have to look into what was going to happen. Well, Thursday, the House convenes really quickly. They go into caucus. The Republicans go upstairs for 2 hours to discuss what they're going to do with John Green.
2 hours?
2 hours. And they come down, they file in, they vote 65-0 unanimous to kick him out. And then we had a press conference afterwards with Speaker Bedke, where he said there was hesitation from some lawmakers behind closed doors, and they didn't say necessarily what those concerns were. But then also Speaker Bedke said he didn't try to, or he didn't ask him to resign, did not pressure him to do so, built a pro and con list of whether or not he should resign. But the Idaho Constitution is clear. If you have been convicted of a felony and you have not had your rights restored by serving your time, paying off your fines, you cannot hold public office.
But let's just talk about this process here for a minute, because that's what really shook me as I think about this. The House took the extraordinary step, maybe the unprecedented step,
first
of expelling a fellow lawmaker. And they did almost all of it behind closed doors, except for the vote. I'm sorry, this is not a jury deliberating and rendering a verdict. These are elected representatives who fired an elected representative. The 15,000 people in John Green's legislative district have no inkling as to how the House arrived at this conclusion. The constituents who elected these 65 House members who voted to fire John Green have no inkling of whether their lawmaker raised questions, had reservations, had concerns, because that all occurred behind closed doors. That is a problem. If you're going to take this kind of an extraordinary step, the people have a right to see it, and they should see it. And I think it taints the process to have done almost all of this discussion behind closed doors, have a two-hour caucus, have about 2 minutes worth of House action because there was no debate, there was no discussion, and a 65-0 vote. That's not a good process.
Yeah, and especially because the House rules allow for an ethics panel that says you must hold a public hearing if you want to kick someone out through the ethics process. But there is another process whereby which they can do this route as well. But they did not choose the public process.
See, and that is the thing. Why not choose the public process? Why not be transparent?
There's no reason they couldn't have done that. And I think that I think the public was owed that. I think, you know, the constituents in District 2 were owed that, but I think constituents across the state were owed that.
I want to stick with the legislature for a bit longer because a big topic of discussion this week, Kevin, has been Common Core. So get us updated on that. But then also the science standards are going to be reviewed next week, correct? Maybe.
Well, we had a lot of discussion in public about Common Core. So there's
in
that.
Public.
No, we had 5.5 hours of hearings this week in House Education Committee over the Common Core standards. Some interesting debate for sure. But the preponderance of the testimony came from educators and education leaders who said, we want to keep the standards in place. They're rigorous. They build on each other. You know, the kids are supposed to learn something in third grade and then they're supposed to learn something in fourth grade and so on down the road. And what we heard from a lot of educators was, look, it would cost us millions of dollars to align to a new set of standards, whatever that looks like. And it would take a lot of time to train. It would be a lot of upheaval. Let's stick with the standards. Critics saying, with some justification, that Common Core has not yielded a lot of improvement in academic scores either in the state or in the nation, for that matter, saying, you know, it's time maybe to stop throwing good money after bad and let's make some changes in terms of the standards, whatever that looks like. And that's not been discussed, what a new set of standards would look like.
But that was part, first off, what I thought was interesting about this was most of the people that did speak about this were in favor of keeping the standards, as you said, Kevin, right?
And even some of the criticism didn't seem to be about the standards themselves, but about the curriculum that is implemented at the local level. That's a decision that's made by school districts and charters. The curriculum that's chosen to align with the standards. At one point, we had a school trustee from Blackfoot read a pretty racy passage from a novel that appears on the suggested or proposed reading list for one of the curricula that's aligned to Common Core, and she lamented that this isn't appropriate for, you know, conservative community in eastern Idaho. And as a trustee, I guess I'm just going to have to read all of the curricular materials before we pick a curriculum. And I'm kind of listening to that and thinking, well, isn't that what trustees are?
Isn't that what you're supposed to do?
Isn't that what trustees do? Because they're ultimately accountable
for the decision
to pick a curriculum. And that does not change whether you stick with Common Core or go to a different set of standards.
But at the same time, Jimmy, they don't have anything else that they would use, correct? Like if they got rid of Common Core.
Well, and that's the thing too. You know, I asked the State Department of Education, hey, what happens if you just blow up Common Core? You take it out of the administrative rules. The department said that it would be chaotic. They said, you know, federal law requires you to have a set of standards and you have to test to these standards and show this. And if they have nothing on which to base the tests, then that's not going to be very good. They said they could possibly lose federal funding. Some states have been either fined or had funding withheld.
I thought State Superintendent Sherry Ibarra raised an interesting point in her testimony. She said these standards come up every 5 years for legislative review anyway, and this time around, next time around would be 2022. And she said, well, let's keep the standards in place. There are changes I'd like to make in the standards myself, but let's do this in sort of a systematic, regularly scheduled way instead of, you know, completely throwing out the standards and creating all sorts of turmoil.
Yeah, both her and Debbie Critchfield, the State Board of Education president, seemed open. They signaled that they were open to, you know, tweaking things and possibly making those changes.
So where does this stand right now?
House Education has taken no votes. Anything that they do with the Common Core standards would then have to go to the Senate, and the Senate hasn't really even talked about the standards yet. And you mentioned science standards. That was originally scheduled to come up in House Education on Monday. That's not happening. The word now is that that may occur on Tuesday or Wednesday, so stay tuned.
And Don, you've been sitting here patiently this whole time.
It's very interesting. This is not my beat. So.
I know, right? So we want to bring you into the conversation because as much as Boise is booming and there is growth everywhere, there has literally been a block in downtown Boise on Idaho Street that's basically been vacant, at least part of it, for what, almost 13 years now when Louis' restaurant closed?
Yeah, so let's talk about it's Idaho Street between 6th and Capitol in downtown Boise, across from Boise City Hall. And you have this kind of funny situation where on one end of the block, you have a bar in Press and Pony and a restaurant.
You have that parking lot, too.
And parking lot. And at the other end, you have Java. And in between, you have, like, nothing. And it's kind of a weird thing in downtown Boise. I have a pretty extensive history with these buildings and have studied the history. The Louis building has been empty since 2007. It was built in the 1940s. The city of Boise calls it a contributing structure to their historic district. And then right next to that is another large 10,000-square-foot building. It's one of the largest single spaces in downtown Boise. And that used to be home to the Old Spaghetti Factory. Louis closed in 2007. Old Spaghetti Factory closed in 2013. Here we are in 2020, and they've been empty. A new ownership group bought this, both buildings, in 2018, consolidating the ownership, and is working on a plan to build a mini entertainment district. Makes some sense. It's close to the 8th Street kind of restaurant row. It's not too far from the 6th and Main area where there are a lot of nighttime activities, bars and such. So they are going to they're either signed or close with four tenants here. The first is Caffeina, which is a coffee chain that's locally owned here that has two locations, one on State Street, one in Overland. This will be their third location. It's big. It's 5,000, almost 5,000 square feet. And beyond just coffee, there's going to be a banquet room. There's going to be places for people to work in this. It sounds like some patios as well. And then next door in the Old Spaghetti Factory building, the folks who own Western Collective, which is a tap room and brewery in Garden City, are going to open up what's called Western Social. I broke this yesterday on Boise Dev. I've been working on it for like 8 months and finally got it up and out yesterday. And if you read about this elsewhere and you didn't see Boise Dev, you might have just seen this one piece, but there's actually more to it. Western Social is going to have bowling, pinball.
Yeah.
They're going to have a 400 standing concert venue, restaurant with breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They'll also serve coffee. They'll serve the Western Collective beer in there. They'll also have a full cocktail program and on and on and on.
You had me at cocktails.
Yeah. So, and they even said, you know, we're kind of aiming to be something for everybody. And then on top of all that, there's two businesses yet to be announced that will go into the Louis building is like a story and a half building.
It's kind of an odd.
So I've been saying the second floor of Louis, but it's like a kind of like a split level.
It is. It's kind of like you've got that upper level, then you kind of step down.
Yeah. So Caffeina will be in what they call the ground floor. And then these two bar and or restaurant buildings that are not announced will go on the second floor. So all of a sudden, by they say late spring or early summer, we're going to have four new businesses in there. And when you add that to Space Bar, Dharma Sushi, Press and Pony, and Java, you've got kind of a block of entertainment, food, and drink uses.
Okay, but when they say something for everyone, will this be family friendly? Because Space Bar, I believe, because it is a bar, my husband walked in there with our 11-year-old. Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Well, it was video games. I mean, you make that assumption, right? When it first
The word bar might have thrown me a little bit.
Yeah, well,
but
you know.
Your mileage may vary. It's an adult-focused venue. I didn't ask if it is 21.
I would just I'd be curious about
that. I'm not sure. You know what? I would actually say it's probably not because they're going to be open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Maybe they do something where Bardinet does, where it turns into that bar at 9 p.m. and then kids can't be in it.
I would imagine that their PR person is listening, and so maybe she'll email me and I can update. But I believe that it's I believe it's going to be all ages, and I'll put that in the story at Boise Dev. I'll check on that regardless and find out. But it is adult-focused.
Yes.
It's like Dave & Buster's by the mall, right? Open to all ages, but they are not focused on kids.
Right.
I think this is a similar idea.
But to have some, and the reason why I asked, to have something in the downtown core that could be, you know, family focused at some points, is huge.
It is, and even beyond that, going back a ways, downtown Boise has, I believe, long had a hole for something experiential. The only things for people to do in downtown Boise after about 6 o'clock are, as James mentions over here silently, eat or drink.
Right.
And so if you're in town for a convention or a conference and it's not a Steelheads game night, there's not a whole lot to do. So I think filling the gap of that experiential piece makes a lot of sense. we'll see, right? It's going to come down to execution, how good the food is and how fun it is and the pricing. But it does seem that there's a lane here, no pun intended, for a use like this.
We're going to be back with more Reporter Roundtable right after this. This is Idaho Matters. We're continuing our Reporter Roundtable today. Our panel, Don Day with BoiseDev.com, Jimmy Dawson with Boise State Public Radio News, and Kevin Richert with Idaho Ed News. Don, I think you got a lot of readership on a recent interview that you did with the new Boise mayor, Lauren McClain. One of the things that came out of that that I wanted to talk about is really this dream of a downtown train, or for lack of a better word. She is not looking in that direction.
Yeah, she's over it.
And there you go. That's,
Kevin, back to you.
Moving on. Yeah.
So I did ask her about this. It didn't actually really come up during the election. I didn't ask about it, and other people didn't come up. Didn't ask about it. I threw myself off by being flippant. So
I'm right.
I'm getting my own karma by
karma's
trying to be funny.
Coming back, Don.
So I did talk to her about this, and my sense, even when the former mayor Dave Beter was hot on a train, that he didn't have a lot of support on a train. Even among his own committee, they didn't recommend a mode, meaning a train or a bus. They said mode unspecific. Here's a route that we'd like to see. The mayor and the city kind of came out and said, I think we have to build rail because it's about vision. And at the time, one of the committee members, who was a prominent downtown landowner, Clay Carley, went on the record with me, and he's like, yeah, no, that doesn't make sense. And here's why. The technology is moving too fast. It's too expensive. So when I talked to Mayor McClain a week ago today and asked her about it, she said the same thing. She's like, you know, I do think that we have to be very focused on figuring out how to move people in the downtown core in modes other than cars, getting them out of cars and onto sidewalks. She said that it makes sense to look at the general idea of a circulator, but she says rail is pretty expensive, and she thinks things like buses and trackless trams make more sense. And I had somebody being like, well, so isn't a trackless tram a bus? It's not, because of the way it functions, and it can use induction motors in the street and some of those kinds of things. So it's a little different. But I don't think that she's a big fan of the rail project. And that was, you know, a lot of people during the election were like, oh, McClain and Beter, they're kind of the same. But where they really differed, I think, are on these big capital projects. And this is one of them where she likes the concept, but not the execution. So I don't think we're ever going to – I honestly never thought we were going to see a train in downtown Boise because of the expense and the political complications. And now I would say that's extremely unlikely.
Jimmy, I want to go back to the legislature for a quick minute, because talk to us about something that Speaker Bedke said earlier this week. When you sent me the note, you said it was pretty interesting.
It was. And I just saw it on Twitter. I was actually at this forum. It was an environmental forum at the Zions Bank building on Wednesday. But according to Logan Finney, who's a McClure fellow from the University of Idaho, he said that Speaker Bedke said that they are not going to mess with the membership of the independent or rather nonpartisan redistricting commission this year when they try to make whatever recommendations they have, whether it's a constitutional amendment or something in statute, which is pretty significant considering that there was a proposed constitutional amendment last year that would have added a seventh member, essentially a tie-breaking vote that would have almost certainly been appointed by Republicans and would have been a Republican, to kind of, in their words, break a logjam of tie votes between three people appointed by Democrats and three people appointed by Republicans. And this is something that got a lot of heat last year. If that is not on the table, then I am very interested to see what is their proposal, whether it's adding new districts. Currently, we're at 35 legislative districts. Speaker Bedke's thrown that out before, or what it might look like.
And Kevin, you're down at the State House quite often. And at this point in the session, not a lot has happened, except JFAC. I mean, they are bustling along.
Yeah, and it's going to be a very busy week at JFAC next week, because you'll have the college and university presidents making their presentations, making their budget pitches. You'll have State Superintendent Cheri Ibarra make her budget pitch on Thursday. It's like you've got these two parallel tracks going on in the legislature. You have JFAC doing what it does, the Joint Finance Appropriations Committee. They're hearing from agencies. They're starting to think about what the budget might look like. They're going to be rolling out budget bills probably this time next month. They'll be getting ready to start to write budget bills, whatever is happening in the other committees, which right now are just bogged down in rules and bogged down in this cumbersome rules review. You know, it's like you got the budgeters and you've got the rest of the legislature, and it's a pretty stark contrast to me so far.
And you mentioned Education Week next week at the State House. We should mention, I mean, they're going to be the president of Boise State University and University of Idaho, new president's first time that they will be presenting.
Right, right. Scott Green on Monday making his first presentation as University of Idaho president. Then you'll have Marlene Tromp next Friday, her first presentation at the Budget Committee. And usually what happens in Education Week is that these university presidents also go before the Education Committees. So Marlene Tromp going before the House Education Committee after everything that's been said over the last 6 months, that's going to be must-see TV. That's like going to be a very interesting.
Like what? Yeah, what happened?
This just in. There's been some discussion between members of the House Education Committee and Marlene Tromp. So to see them in the same room after all of that will be interesting, to say the least.
Kevin, do you think that her presence and popularity changes that dynamic?
I think so. I think she has actually won over some legislators just by being open to them and being willing to talk to them. I mean,
Going to their districts
and going meeting them on their home turf. I thought was very politically wise, and I think that diffuses it to some degree.
But it's worth paying attention to next week. And I have to say, sometimes you don't necessarily, if you're just that average person, not paying much attention to Education Week at the State House. But as you said, this might be really interesting.
We'll have plenty to write about one way or the other. I'm not worried about that.
Don, so Albertsons might go public?
Did I put this on my story list? I don't even remember. Yes. The Wall Street Journal reported this week that Albertsons Companies, which is based here in Boise, it's the second largest grocer in the country behind Kroger, which owns Fred Meyer. They are the third largest privately held company in the entire country. They're looking at going public. Not a huge surprise. They are owned primarily by a private equity firm who has had had this since 2006. Usually private equity firms buy something, get it to where they want it to be, and they sell it off and make their profit. And they've been kind of stuck with this asset. In 2015, they tried to go public and the stock market kind of went sideways. And the grocery sector particularly went sideways because of disappointing earnings at the time from Walmart. So they pulled back. Then they tried to acquire Rite Aid. Rite Aid is a public company, and that transaction would have then made the combined entity a public company, and it would have given Cerberus a way to cash out their investment. So now here we are in 2020, and Albertsons is, according to the Wall Street Journal, again mulling whether to go public. What this means for Boise is probably not a lot in the short term, but it does change the way a company operates. Private companies technically don't have to report their results each quarter. However, Albertsons has been doing that for the last 4 years, which is tremendously helpful to journalists because we can tell you how the company's doing. And for Albertsons, those results are really strong. Their same store results, which is a comparison of stores open a previous year to the current year, beat Kroger for the first time in a long time in terms of growth. And they've been growing each quarter. Their new CEO, who did move here to Boise, Vivek Sankaran, has been very focused on technology and new initiatives. The grocery sector, as almost any retail sector has been over the last 20 years, faces a threat primarily from Amazon. But grocery is a little different in that it's very heavily fragmented, and it's hard to deliver goods to your house. So if you're Amazon, and even though they're building a big presence here, if their groceries are stored in a warehouse in Nampa and they got to get to your house in Southeast Boise, that's tricky. But moving groceries from a store in Southeast Boise to a home in Southeast Boise is less tricky. So some of these old line retailers actually have an advantage, and they're trying very quickly to get ahead of Amazon in this space. And early results for Albertsons, which owns Safeway and lots of other chains, are promising. Could be a good time for them. The stock market's hot. The economy's hot, and it could finally get Albertsons to a public status. Well,
and then you look at the Albertsons they built on Broadway in Boise, and then did that again on Eagle Road.
Yep.
These are the first of its kind in the nation. And I tell you, I mean, normally in Boise, I think there's this, you know, something new opens and you can't get in, or it's really busy, and then, you know, wait a couple months and it dies down. It's still hard to find a parking spot at that Albertsons on Broadway.
Well, and it's interesting because when both of those stores opened, I toured through and talked to their PR folks, and I asked them, do you think that this will hurt other stores? And they said, we don't. But I'm not at the Market Street store on Fairview and Eagle very often, but I'm at the Broadway store almost every day. Yeah, I hate to admit
I'm
in there a lot because I'm over here in this part of town. Yeah. It's very busy, but the other stores don't seem to have taken a hit either. So it's generating incremental trips for them, which was their idea. And it's because of the offerings beyond just grocery that are helping drive that. So that's interesting. And they're going to do some more of those stores, not here locally, but around the country. They had hoped to do one per division and use it as a lab. So they launched new ideas there. Like the Meridian store has all the vegetables like scoopable. They're pre-cut. You can like scoop them out. So if you need like a cup of onion, you can scoop that out and it's all already cut. So ideas like that that they try at these big news stores, and if they work, they roll them out across the country.
That's what I have a husband for, is to chop those vegetables. I mean, and mow the lawn and, you know, but it's a great concept though. And you're right. I mean, I am at the one on Broadway quite often. There's just an influx of people. There doesn't seem to be a downtime.
No. And Albertsons is a significant – the reason I cover it on Boise Dev is they are a significant component of the Boise economy. Not only do they employ a lot of people, but if you look around town, there's lots of – like there's Sara Lee that has a base here, and General Mills has employees here, and all these different companies have co-located here because they service the Albertsons account. Oh, and by the way, Winco's based here too. So – people forget that grocery is a big part of our economy, so the health of Albertsons tends to go with the health of Boise in a general sense as well.
I want to thank all of you for coming in today. Our panel, Don Day with Boise Dev, James Dawson with Boise State Public Radio News, and Kevin Richard with Idaho Ed News. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Gemma.
Thank you.
This is Idaho Matters.